Good afternoon, everybody. I call the meeting to order. It's December 11th, 2014 meeting of the TAC. We do have a quorum, so we'll move on to the minutes of the September 8th meeting. Do I have a motion to approve?
Dave White, move to approve.
Jasper, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Are approved. Move on to the staff reports, the financial progress report, and we will ask for a motion for this. Mr. Zegarty.
Hey, thanks, Mr. Chairman. Financial progress report was attachment 3A in your folders. If I can direct your attention to the bottom line, this is as of November 30th, so we're 5 months into the fiscal year. We've expended 45% of the budget, which is right where we should be. Not any problems to report. The work program and budget's going along well, so I would recommend approval of the financial progress report.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. Move on to the technical progress report. Mr. Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of things I'd like to report on. First, we are suggesting some pretty major changes to our Citizens Involvement Committee. Some of you know our committee was actually, it was a case where in our bylaws, mayors would appoint citizens to participate, and then there were also volunteer citizens. They'd have to go to two meetings to become members, and then they would actually vote on every item on the agenda. As you can imagine, that over the years was incredibly cumbersome and also not a really great way to get public feedback. So we are talking to our Citizens Committee about changing the format, changing it to more of a quarterly basis where we talk about a couple of transportation topics as well as some of our items throughout the mail outs that we see. And we're also talking about removing membership of the CIC completely. The CIC has actually sort of run bylaws while like an independent from the policy committee. They have their own sets of bylaws. To change those bylaws, they actually vote to change them. But we're thinking that, you know, we usually, our participation is sometimes between three or four people. And what our goal is to try to get more up to 15 or 20 people a month or a meeting by having kind of a little bit more of a, I would say, modernized meeting structure, not something that fits Robert's rules, etc. So we want to let the TAC know. We'll be talking to policy about it. We are meeting with the CIC tonight to decide if that's the way we're going. But as staff, we're incredibly excited about it. As you can imagine, for some of you even, I think some of our resolutions and items aren't always, you know, the most interesting and or clear things that we work on. So for them, I think even asking them to approve items like our work program or other things or resolutions just doesn't seem to really work that well. So it's one of the things that we're going to be talking about tonight with our Citizens Involvement Committee, and we are really excited that we think we could really make a change for the better with those meetings. Also, just another thing that the staff is starting to work on now is a road diet analysis for our two counties. That work kind of actually dovetails a little bit into the report we're seeing today with the mid-block crossings, where we identified areas where we thought the locations could be necessary. The road diets, for those of you that don't know, it's obviously looking at a lot of four-lane roads, shrinking them to three lanes based on ADT, level of service, etc. We are hoping to get a final of that. Probably you'll see it in March. But we are looking towards kind of identifying those roads for you that would be good candidates for that type of development. Finally, on the more national scale, and I don't know if it's positive or not, last night there was a $1.1 trillion spending bill proposed. The deadline for the spending bill, the budget bill, is tonight that Congress has to vote on it. If they do vote on it, that would increase, or it would keep our appropriations going through the calendar year of 2015. And with that, I think the biggest thing that we were able to glean out of the news so far, there's not a lot of details other than that the estimate is that the transportation appropriations would stay about the same, and the TIGER program would still exist at about $500 million. And that's really all I could pull from it right now. I'm sure there'll be more details in the days to come if it is voted on and approved. But I guess the deadline to get it done is and to vote on it is tonight. So are there any other questions? I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Move on to the AMATS Federal Funds Report. Mr. Bodison.
Thank you. Our TACTF subcommittee had a meeting about 3 weeks ago, and I'll touch on some of the items that they talked about. If we look at our funding program balances table, the last two large sheets in the back, we had a project review meeting also a couple weeks ago. We have these quarterly where our projects are at. If you look at the table, you'll see that there's individual projects that have been moved out of the new book, fiscal year or once a week ago. That's a result of that meeting we had. We're going to do some more moves. We need to finalize the fiscal year 2016 lockdown for ODOT. Hopefully that'll be done next week. So some of those that you see in 16 will likely be moved. We don't know which one at this point in time. Moving on to the next sheet, that last sheet. There'll still be some more moves. This will be based on the new TIP that spans the year 16 through 19. And if you'll look there at the bottom of this year 2019, it shows that we're overspending by about $11.5 million. One of the requirements of the TIP is that it's financially constrained, meaning that we can't have more projects than that we have money available. So we're going to have to move projects out of beyond 19 into 2020, just so we could get that balance. And then once the TIP is approved, we can move those back in as their schedules permit. So there will be some more moves done there, too. And then one last thing I did want to mention. It doesn't show on this table, but for fiscal year 2014, if you'll recall, ODOT adopted this carry-forward policy, carry-forward reduction policy, where we're trying to make sure that the FPOs are spending their funds and not carrying over millions of dollars each and every year. So what they did was they set up these thresholds. And fiscal year 2014, I think, was the first year of that. And there were three MPOs in Ohio that successfully carried forward less than those established thresholds. And the rest of the MPOs were over those thresholds. So what happened was ODOT, all those MPOs that went over their threshold, ODOT basically recalled all those funds, and then they redistributed to the three MPOs that did meet those thresholds. And we, thankfully, were one of the MPOs that did meet the thresholds. And so that basically meant that, well, they took those funds and then they redistributed based on MPO population size. So that ended up being $508,000 for MPOs.
So do we applaud you for the good work?
No, that's for everybody. That's my next comment. Thank you for all your sponsors and getting those projects done on time. And, of course, a big thanks to ODOT, who does quite a bit of effort in getting those projects through our project review meetings, making sure that they're on schedule and sold on time. So that's great, and it did make a positive impact to our area. And if you look at future years, next year is the biggest year ever at this point in time, $43 million worth of projects. Like I said earlier, though, likely some of those are going to move into 16 as we move into 17 as we do the final lockdown for 16. But we have big years coming up. So we have to keep that effort up. Moving on to the next item, payment condition rating. Probably the last time we'll be mentioning that. If you'll recall, Summit County Engineer's Office took the lead on this, and we sent out a letter a couple months ago seeing which communities in our area were interested in joining this collective regional PCR data collection program. There was a handful of responses from that. So because of that, and also the fact that ODOT has now continued collecting the PCR data in our area, AMATS will not officially be a part of this effort at this time.
But the Summit County is still going forward with their effort, and anybody who's interested can contact Joe Perry as we come. Statewide CMAQ funding, that first table, second page of the handout. This is the list of CMAQ projects that were approved by this and the policy committee back in September. This is the prioritized list that we set down to Columbus. We've had several meetings, we've had several conference calls, and basically these projects were added to all the other projects throughout the state. I fit the exact number, but there's definitely over 100 projects that were submitted. And so our challenge was to make sure that everything was scored consistently. So we spent a lot of effort trying to do that. And then the other big effort that was done is typically the RTAs request more than they can comfortably receive in terms of replacement buses. So all the MPOs went back to the RTAs and asked them to revise the amount that they're comfortable with. There was one project that requested $47 million worth of bus replacements, and there's only $120 million available in this program for the 2 years we were looking at. So everybody went back, and Metro was able to reduce the amount that they had requested, and what that basically did was going down the list of approved of scored projects and the amount of funding was available, that made it possible for us to get three projects under this program. So the Talmadge Road Improvement Project in Portage County, the Metro and Part of Bus Buy, and then also the Streetsboro Citywide Signal Upgrade Project. So this list will be finalized with this part of the statewide list at a meeting next week. And so we look to approve these or amend them to the TIP in January as far as what we would do next. And then just the last thing I wanted to mention, just to touch on, kind of briefly mentioned this already, the new TIP covers fiscal year 16 through 19. We were finalizing the first draft of that list. It'll come to you in January. We still have another update from ODOT. And if you could take a look at that list, just make sure your projects are right here in the amounts of what was approved. And we'll do that, but just if you could check also. So that's all I have on this slide.
Questions for Mr. Bodison? Thank you, sir. Have no old business, so we'll move on to number 5 on the agenda, new business. District-wide school travel plan for Akron Public Schools, attachment 5A in your handout. Ms. Jividen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attachment 5A includes a summary of the completed Akron Public Schools district-wide travel plan as part of the Safe Routes to School program that was administered by ODOT. The City of Akron was approved for this program in 2013, of which AMF funded $100,000 in transportation alternative program funds with a $25,000 local match from the City of Akron, and $125,000 was provided by ODOT. The Akron School Travel Plan includes all 41 kindergarten through 8th grade schools in the Akron Public School System, and is one of the first district-wide school travel plans of this scale in Ohio and nationwide. The goal of the program is to enable and encourage children to walk and bicycle to school by implementing projects and activities that improve the health and safety of children, and it results in less traffic congestion within a 1 to 2 mile range of each public school in Akron. The school travel plan, it identifies priority corridors within a 1 mile area of each school, and these were evaluated through planning team input, principal and parent surveys, student travel tallies, and walk audits. Then countermeasures were developed, and they were based on pedestrian and bicycle potential and deficiencies, school demographics, and feasibility, including cost. These then form the basis of the action plan that outlines the priority and time frame of each. And the action plan, it's comprised of school and city policy support, non-infrastructure countermeasures, and location-specific infrastructure countermeasures. The plan will act as a foundation for the City of Akron in applying for Safe Routes to School funds through ODOT, but it will also provide a framework and opportunity for other communities in the region in establishing a Safe Routes to School program based on what has worked for Akron. Attachment 5A includes the executive summary of the school travel plan, and the full plan and list of countermeasures, they will be available on AMET's website for the public to review. Are there any questions? If not, I ask that the staff request a motion for approval to endorse the Akron Public Schools district-wide travel plan as completed.
Okay, if I move to approve.
Jasper, second.
Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
And if I could just add one thing, as Phyllis mentioned, we really do think that this plan, because of its scope and the breadth of topics that were covered, is really a best practice for the region. So while we realize not every school system is as large or has as many opportunities for students to walk, I'd encourage all of you guys to take a look at it if you can, maybe see what is relevant to your community. And I know that Phyllis would be willing and able to maybe connect you with some of the people that worked on it if you were interested in similar projects or programs for your own school system in your community, because it's a pretty neat plan. It was very comprehensive.
Yeah, Jason, I want to add that the team that worked on this plan really put in a lot of effort, talked to principals and crossing guards and the police department, and it was a real comprehensive effort to get the information to see what was going on with the kids and walking to school and how better to promote a healthy lifestyle. So I know Andy's here. I want to mention his name because he was the point guy on that. He put in a lot of time and a lot of work on this, and this is the fruits of his labor. So everybody on the team really did a great job on this.
Okay, moving on to the mid-block crossing analysis. Attachment 5B in your handout, Mr. Bridgeland.
Mr. Chairman. In everyone's packet is attachment 5B, and that's the AMATS mid-block crossing analysis. We do a lot of pedestrian planning here at AMATS, and one gap that we thought we'd identified in that data in our planning efforts was exactly that, looking at mid-block crossings, people crossing the middle of the block far from standard intersections. And we just wanted to get a better desire over, have a desire to get a better understanding of the issue, and this is kind of the result of that analysis. The impetus for putting this report together, it kind of came from our pedestrian crash report. It was kind of startling to see that about one in five of the nearly 500 pedestrian crashes occurred at mid-block crossing locations. So we thought that really justified a further, more in-depth look into the situation. There have been national stories that have really brought this discussion into kind of into the conversation. A story of a young mother in Atlanta that crossed the street with her kids in front of a bus to get to her home was hit by a car, and she was actually charged with involuntary manslaughter because her child was killed, and it's because the bus stop was no closer than a third of a mile from any stoplight, and naturally someone with kids is going to kind of cross there, you know, to get home. And it's a big issue that we want to look at. Also, just kind of driving home, you know, around here, just general observations around the area. This is something that happens a lot. And so if there's any way we can make this, you know, kind of corral the behavior into safer spots, it was definitely worth taking a look at. We thought the report that's in the packet, our goal was to come up with a concise resource that combined a lot of information on the topic into one nice little reference piece. And just a quick breakdown, it first describes the nature of the problem and it goes into pedestrian behavior. There's some really interesting statistics and figures that we found by doing a literature research and everything. For instance, average crossing speeds by people of different age groups and ability and everything. There's some really interesting statistics there. We put together a methodology of how we're going to get our hands around this problem, and I'll go into a little more detail about that in a moment. All of this analysis resulted in a list, and as of where it stands now, is 41 locations around the region, spread pretty much throughout, of areas where we identified that there may be justified safer pedestrian crossings at mid-block locations. And then finally, we conclude the report with potential solutions and found the levels of effectiveness of each of those solutions that are offered. So I'll keep the methodology really brief. It's detailed pretty well in the book there. What we looked at to determine where mid-block crossing locations may be justified, we started looking at areas where land uses were expected to generate high numbers of pedestrians, things like schools, government centers, parks, large housing developments. It's kind of started there, and then we drilled down from there. One common place we looked at were areas where major parking areas are located across the street from their destinations. That pops up a lot around hospitals and universities. There's a lot of traffic flow across some pretty major streets in those areas. Mid-block transit stops were a very common location. They just happened frequently, and especially when they were across the street from fairly high-density housing or some other really popular travel destination. We looked at those with some good scrutiny. We looked at only areas with fairly long blocks. If there were regular signalized intersections, even unsignalized intersections, maybe left those areas alone, but where blocks were roughly around 400 feet long, that's where we thought mid-block crossings may be more justified. We also looked at average speed limits of the areas, anything over 25 miles an hour. Basically, this rules out all residential areas and everything, but that was kind of our starting point in that regard. We looked up traffic volumes. Those are places, where street crossings are much more difficult and dangerous. And finally, we looked at the absence of signalized intersections, where there were few breaks in traffic flow, making crossings more dangerous as well. So after analyzing the whole area, we came up with a draft list of proposed recommendations. We emailed that out to all members of the TAC and Policy Committee for basically the month of October to review. We got quite a bit of feedback on it and adjusted everything from that point on. So the draft that you have before you has 41 locations. We're more than happy to add, subtract to that, whatever, if anybody has anything that pops up. We would just love to have a resource to look at. So in future projects and other planning efforts, that's one place we can look to kind of get a grasp of this whole situation. So we've incorporated the comments into the draft that you have in front of you, and we are requesting a motion for approval. The staff recommends approval, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have about it.
Jason?
And if I could just add a couple other things for you to think about as we go to approve the report. I did want to thank Nate and the rest of the staff for putting this together, because this is the first time we've really taken an analysis like this on. I think it will be helpful, again, like the way we described the Safe Routes to School report. Definitely, if you, as Nate said, if there are locations you think should be added, we can add those. But I think its benefit is even more than just the locations that are recommended, but some of the information that was pulled together about where mid-block crossings make sense. And as Nate said, for good or for bad, people take the path of least resistance. So if you do have an 800-foot-long block, as we have in parts of downtown Akron, people are probably going to cross that block mid-block. They're not going to walk that far. And I think we also found that there are areas, we're working on a Connecting Communities project at Montrose, parts of 18, where it's seven lanes, that's 72 feet of pavement just for the lanes. Even for someone who walks fast, which would be six feet a second, it's going to take them 12 seconds just to cross that street. And for somebody who is older or has some sort of a disability, it'll take longer. So I was really happy to see that a lot of that detail was incorporated here, because I think it does provide another tool for each of you at the local level if you want to delve more into the issue. I think this is a pretty good succinct resource to start to do that. So, and if there are any further questions, we'd be happy to take them.
What about implementation of these? Is there going to be, a lot of this is primarily signing and striping. Are there Are there funding sources that will be available for implementation of this? Has this been discussed at all?
I think what we would recommend, I mean, these projects are all eligible for STP funds and for transportation enhancement, or I still want to call it that, transportation alternatives program. But I think with our funding, normally it's going to make the most sense as part of a larger project, like a resurfacing, or because we wouldn't normally recommend somebody apply for, say, $10,000. You know, it wouldn't be worth, right. But I think where with our funds, where they really make sense is when you're designing a project to use what's recommended here as kind of a screening.
Okay.
Right.
This scares me when you tell it. Mid-block crosswalks are probably the most dangerous thing to have.
Next to signalizing the person to go on.
The pedestrian expects the driver to stop. The driver doesn't expect to have a conference. He expects to drive down the road. I think you got to use this very, very carefully. Bad enough, like Dave said, to signalize intersections. When you start encouraging people to cross 72 foot on pavement, state route 18, it becomes a hazard waiting to happen. It becomes a liability for any governmental agencies to put the stripe out there and say, go ahead, cross here. You're safe. And if you mix the elderly, the infirmed, or the youth with it, be very careful. Don't use this as a blanket to go out and put mid-blocks everywhere.
Right. I think that's...
out there, there's some places where it's needed. There's some places where I wouldn't even touch it.
And that's a good point, that we very much see this as a planning tool, and I think when you get to the engineering or design stage for the any of the areas you're talking about where it's going to be a surprise to the driver, I think that's where we would recommend if it is to be done, it's going to need a signal or signage or things that are commensurate with the amount of traffic, both pedestrian and vehicular. Because I think you're right, what we're not recommending is just every location on Nate's list, go out and stripe it, and don't mark it with anything else. It's a good point.
And in the report where it shows the effectiveness of the various solutions, you'll notice that anything less than a fully signalized intersection, or a signalized crossing, there's very little driver adherence to it. There's sometimes quite a range, but people do not respect the flashing yellow lights very often, so this something has to be done very carefully. We observed that for our own pedestrian counting. Recently on State Route 82 up in Boston Heights, where the hike and bike trail crosses, it's pretty well signalized, flashing yellow lights, lots of signage and stuff, and drivers did not want to let cyclists cross very often. Sometimes there were some sketchy moments. So it definitely has to be looked at closely. We just want to get an initial grip on everything and kind of, get our hands around.
But it's pointed out in here is most of the recommended locations is where people are crossing anyway.
Yeah.
So why not help protect them if they're crossing them anyway?
There's a balance between making it safe and whether you really do want to discourage it. Like, you definitely create a legal crossing and justify it at that point. But yeah, it's an interesting topic.
Any questions or comments? We have a motion for approval.
Dave White, move to approve.
Second. Fred Guerra, second. Vote, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Passes. Okay, moving on to item number 6, resolutions. Resolution 2014-16, approving amendment number 16 to the Transportation Improvement Program, fiscal year 2014-17, to add two new projects and revise the schedule, funding, or scope of work to 6 existing projects. There will be a motion requested, attachment 6A in your handout. Mr. Pillay.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attachment 6A is amendment 16 to the 2014-17 Transportation Improvement Program. This amendment does add two new projects and changes the funding, schedule, or scope of work to 6 existing projects. The two new projects, first one is in Portage County. This is Talmadge Road, or County Road 18 in Burnfield Township. This is adding funding for engineering, and what they're planning to do there is reconfigure the intersection of Talmadge Road, Longaboard Road, and the I-76 ramps. And right now they're proposing to design a diverging diamond intersection there. The second new project is in Akron. It's White Pond Parkway, which is a new street. It'll be off of White Pond Drive near the first, it'll be across the street from First Energy Drive, which is the drive that goes into the new First Energy office complex there. This is engineering is scheduled in fiscal year 2015 and construction in 2016. And the then there are six existing projects where the funding, schedule, or scope of work is being revised. The first one is Bookholzer Boulevard up by Chapelville Mall. That's putting in new sidewalks, moving construction actually up to fiscal year 16. Papacon Avenue resurfacing in Barberton. Also moving that construction up to fiscal year 15. Springdale Road bike lanes, moving construction from fiscal year 18 into 16. State Route 18 in Western Summit County, this is adding $25,000 for base repairs for the, as part of the asphalt resurfacing. Darrell Road, State Route 91. This is adding an adjacent section of State Route 82 into that project, which will also be resurfaced. And State Route 241, Maslin Road in Green, adding engineering in fiscal year 15. This project just recently received safety funding. The staff recommends approval, and I'd be happy to try to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions? Do we have a motion to approve?
I move.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Resolution 2014-17, approving fiscal year 2015 elderly and disabled program project recommendations. We will be requesting a motion and attachment 6B in your handout, Mr. Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This item presents project recommendations for the enhanced mobility of the elderly and disabled program. This program provides funding for the public transportation of the elderly and disabled, including transportation to and from jobs and employment support services. The staff received three applications for funding: Metro RTA, United Disability Services, and Family and Community Services submitted their applications to us in the fall. All three agencies are eligible to submit applications under this program. $1.1 million in federal funds were available during this round of funding. The staff is recommending that the policy committee approve $802,000 in federal funds through this program for Metro RTA for the purchase of small buses. The staff is also recommending $254,000 in federal funds for UDS and $56,000 in funds to Family and Community Services to purchase handicapped accessible vehicles and support equipment. Attached to this memo is Resolution 2014-17. This resolution approves the amendment FY 2015 TIP as requested. The TAC TIP subcommittee has reviewed and approved this request. The staff recommends approval. Are there any questions?
No questions. Do we have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. Thank you, Mr. Gardner. Moving on to Resolution 2014-18, amending the Transportation Improvement Program, fiscal year 2014-17, to add and revise funds in 2015 for part of capital projects. Attachment 6C, Mr. Gardner.
Thanks. Part of it is requesting that FY 2015 of the TIP be amended to reflect revised project cost estimates and a reprioritization of their vehicle replacement schedule. For preventive maintenance funding in FY 2015, part of requesting that the federal share be increased from $600,000 to $660,000, with the total project cost increase from $885,000 to $900,000. The federal share will be 80%. BART is also requesting to revise their FY 2015 purchase of vehicles from the purchase of one new large bus to the purchase of six refurbished large buses. This project will be funded at 80% federal share derived from federal public transit funds. The federal share will increase from $275,000 to $576,000. Local share will increase from $100,000 to $144,000, and the total project cost will increase from $375,000 to $720,000. Resolution 2014-18 is consistent with the area's regional transportation plan. This financially constrained, air quality neutral, and meets requirements for public involvement and environmental justice. The staff is recommending approval of Resolution 2014-18. Are there any questions?
Dave White, move to approve.
Second.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Mr. Gardner? Moving on to other business, a report from the 2015 nominating committee. I guess that's me. First, I guess I want to thank Bob Finney and Dave Gasper for being volunteers on the committee and through correspondence. Came up with a couple names, and we would like to nominate Ms. Christine Craycock as the chairman for 2015. So I have a motion to approve.
So moved. Dave White, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Congratulations. And for the vice chair for 2015, we'd like to nominate Ms. Amy Moore. And do I have a motion to approve Amy?
So moved.
Second. Paradise. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Amy, congratulations. Takes care of our nominating committee and moving on to the meeting calendar. Mr. Zegarty.
Okay, this one should be pretty brief, so I was going to take just 1 second to mention one other thing. AMAC was recognized in a new report by Transportation for America that just came out yesterday called the Innovative MPO, and they had best practices across the country. We were recognized for the Connecting Communities program that we started, and that, when I say we, I do mean we being all of us, because both TAC and Policy Committee helped us create and set up that program, and we are contemplating some changes to it that I think are going to make it even more effective in the future. But I did want to mention that to you guys. We'll put that report on our website if you're interested in taking a look at it. As far as the calendar is concerned, this is pretty standard, but I just wanted to mention for TAC, for next year, as usual, we'll have 6 meetings planned throughout the year. You can see on the second page of 7B, when they'll be. We plan on having them here next year as well. This has seemed to work out pretty well overall. The annual meeting will be in October, as per usual, on a Friday. And then one word on the Citizens Involvement Committee. I just wanted to mention, too, to augment what Curtis said earlier. We have 4 meetings planned, so that committee is going to go to a quarterly meeting schedule. It's going to be, as Curtis mentioned, a little bit more open-ended. We hope a little bit more engaging. It's not going to be as tied to parliamentary procedures like our other committees. But one thing that we are committed to that won't show up on this calendar right now. If we have an item on the TAC or Policy Committee agenda that does require special public involvement, it's some large expenditure of funds. We have rules in our public involvement policy for how that works. We'll add additional CIC meetings. So we'll have at least four, and if need be, if they need to actually weigh in on something that requires public involvement, specifically that's before this committee or policy, we'll do that too. But we anticipate four of those and six of this committee. And I guess we're looking for approval of this one as well.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Calendar's approved. Okay. One thing I did forget to mention on the nominating committee, I did want to thank Perry Prater a lot. He kind of got us all together and kept everything moving, and his efforts were greatly appreciated. Thank you, Perry.
Thank you, Chairman.
And then, okay, the next regular meeting will be Thursday, January the 22nd, right here. And do I have a motion for adjournment? Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Meeting's adjourned.